All right. Ready to go, Reg? All set? Okay. Everything seems to be in order today. Microphone is where it should be. Looks like their levels are good. The chair is in the right spot. It's at the right height. The board is all clean. There's no pens sitting around or cups or... It actually looks like I said before. Leave it the way you found it. Nice. Maybe my... Oh, hello. Maybe my... maybe my little comments around here have had some impact. We'll see. Anyway, you ready to go? All right, let's do this. Put it in the book, episode 342. I'll give you the three S's and I'll give you the countdown. Give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. How's that? I'm all set. Are you? Cool. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's see how the music kicks in today, too. Have you tried it? No. Well, we'll just have to we'll have to give it a shot here. Huh? We'll see. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Okay. That's too long. That's too long. Right? Yeah, you see that, right? All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course we're there. Duh. And don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast wherever you find it. And if you like what you hear, don't forget. Because this is the key thing. It's the third time I'm saying don't forget. But don't forget, that's the fourth time. To get out there and spread the word. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody who listens to a podcast. That your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs, too. Oh, that loyalty. That devotion. It's so warm. It's like a roasted chestnut around the holiday season, isn't it? Don't forget, if you like what you hear, you go to WGNRadio.com. You go to the podcast section. You go to the prompt under the podcast section for this specific podcast. And my goodness. Just keep scrolling down and scrolling down. You'll see podcast after podcast after podcast after podcast. It's always a good idea to see where we've been to see where we're going. And right now, we're going to episode number 342. So, I don't know if you've been reading the... Well, I don't know. Does anyone listen to read newspapers anymore? I don't know if you've been seeing the news, scrolling through the news. What do we say? What are we scanning the news? I don't even know what you can say anymore. You can watch the news, obviously, on television. They still have that. That's still old school. That's still somewhat passive. You still turn on the TV at certain periods of time, and the news is on. That hasn't changed. That's about the only thing in the news world that hasn't changed in the last 15 years or so since the internet took over. But certainly, I don't know if newspapers, if people can even say that. I do know a few people who do. I still see them reading newspapers, so I still see them. They look like relics. The funny thing is, at my health club, in the lobby, they had a couple of, you know, those, I don't even know if people even know what these are anymore. But for those of you who remember them, remember the newspaper machines? They used to have like a little newspaper machine that you could buy a newspaper from on the street. They would be, you know, chained because of our society. They were chained to poles usually. And there was a series of them at many different corners, especially in the downtown areas or busy areas in the city. You would see newspaper machines where you could put your change in, and the newspaper would be displayed in a little glass front there. You could see the headlines to entice you to buy it, and then you'd put the money in, and you'd pull the face of that down, and inside there would be a bunch of newspapers. And it was certainly, you know, the honor system. You pay for one, and the honor system was you take one. I don't know how many people used to take multiple copies, but you rarely see those machines anymore. I guess it's a machine, right? A newspaper machine, right? What else can you call it? I guess it was a machine because it took money. I mean, it's a vending machine, right? Although it wasn't electronic, so maybe it wasn't a machine. Did it have another name that I've completely forgotten? Doesn't matter, because I think those, I mean, that would actually, I wouldn't mind, you know, I collect odd things sometimes. That, I think, would be cool to have. I wonder if I can go on eBay and find a newspaper, what is it called? Machine, right? I guess. I'll have to look that up now. Once again, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but now that I'm thinking about it, that would be kind of cool to have that. The reason I mention is because there are a couple that are still sitting in the lobby of my health club. But I remember, you know, as I said, that the newspaper was displayed in the front in a little piece of glass window that you could read the headline to be enticed to buy it. And I was walking past it, I saw like the little headline above the masthead, and it said something about the Cubs. So it was obviously in the summer. And so I'm looking at it because it was the summertime when I noticed this. And it said something about the Cubs and Yu Darvish, who was a, you know, pitcher on the Cubs. And so when I first saw this little mini headline above the masthead, I assumed that it was maybe a, you know, the Cubs. I don't even really follow the schedules anymore, so I assumed that maybe he's on San Diego now. At least he was this past season. So I was saying, well, maybe it's, you know, about you Darvish pitching or, you know, against, you know, for the Cubs, you know, against the Cubs, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked closer at the headline. And this is to say, this is why these machines are so outdated. That paper that was displayed in the window of the newspaper machine was from when Yu Darvish was still on the Cubs. And I don't remember how many years that's been now. Has it been at least two? So that newspaper, I don't think they've even filled that machine for at least 1 or 2 years. But I wonder how much one of those would cost. That would be kind of an interesting item to have, because it really is this this relic from another time when newspapers were one of the main sources of information. And I remember being in high school and trying to be really cool. There was a way if you did it right, and I don't know, for some reason, and I wasn't a thief or a deviant or by any means, but you know, you like to sort of show off when you're a teenager, especially around your friends. There was a way that if you grabbed the handle of the door that opened the machine to get the newspapers, if you grabbed the handle and you hit, now I'm a righty, so I grabbed the handle with my left hand, and if you hit it at just the right time, you had to time it right, you had to pull back with my right hand, you'd hit the top where you put the money in. There was little slots for quarters and nickels and dimes. If you simultaneously hit that spot where you inserted the coins and pushed down to open the door of the newspaper machine, boom, at the same time, with just the right touch, it would open, and you wouldn't have to pay for a paper. And so I used to do that every so often. And sometimes I wouldn't even take the paper, to be honest with you. I would just come do it just to show you I can do it. I don't think I took the paper all that often. Maybe one or two times just to look cool, you know. 17-year-old, 18-year-old, 16-year-old, trying to be cool, show off to your friends. That's the kind of things that a 16 or 17, at least when I was growing up, that's what we did to be cool. Now 16 and 17-year-olds, they try to impress their friends by carjacking. Wow, things have changed in the last 40 years or so, haven't they? Anyway, yeah, that's what we used to do for fun. We would try to get 15-cent newspapers for free out of the newspaper machine by opening it and at the same time by pulling down and hitting that, you know. but yeah, I mean, that used to be the main source of information. But I don't know if you've been looking in the news. I don't know what you do for news now. I'll be honest with you. I you know, as a little kid, my parents subscribed to both newspapers. And that's one reason why I think I got involved in media from a young age. I was always reading at a very young age. Probably started with the newspaper. And so that's why I've always been interested in news in news and especially in Chicago and politics, because I would read the newspaper every day, even as a little kid in first and second grade. When we first started to read, that was what I sort of used. And I would start reading it every day, and I would comprehend and understand. And then I watched the news, and I would get more information. And that's sort of where I developed this. In fact, I remember I had an internship at the CBS station here in Chicago, Channel 2 News, when I was in college, and I may have told the story one time. And after I got the internship, after the interview, I was talking with the woman that hired me, and she said, "You know, your interview was fine. You did a nice job." She said, "But what really cinched it," and this was an off the top of my head remark. I didn't, as I prepared for this interview, you know, and how am I going to say this, and what am I going to talk about, and my experience, and why I want to get, you know, why I want this internship, and blah blah blah. But it was just an off the cuff remark I made, which resonated with her in terms of my news junkie kind of personality. She said, "You know, your video was very good. You're fine, everything. But when you said, because I made a joke," oh, that's a surprise, right? I made a joke that I said, "Well, if you go into my bedroom, I don't even have carpeting. My floor is covered with newspapers and magazines. That's my carpeting, because I am, to some extent, it was true. I wasn't that messy, but I was always reading. I had magazines and newspapers always, every morning, every day, always was reading that stuff. So I made this joke that my floor was carpeted with newspapers and magazines." And she said, "That is when I knew you were the right person for this internship." So you never know what's going to resonate with people. So you might want to just, you know, keep yourself as an open book, and don't discount your ad libs. But that's what actually got me my internship. Talking about it is sort of, I guess it exemplified how much of a news and information junkie I was, that I was so into reading the newspapers and magazines and being up on current events and things like that, that they were just all over the place. And so much so that it carpeted my room. But I don't know. I've been reading newspapers since I was a little kid. And not only has the price of a newspaper gone up, and I've talked about this too, to a large amount, considering what you're getting. I mean, newspapers today are like pamphlets. They're so thin, you can read. I probably stopped subscribing to newspapers, and that was a very difficult thing for me to do. But the quarterly rates were just ridiculous for what I was getting. I was going through the paper in 5-10 minutes. There wasn't a lot of content there, and the price was going up. And I'm like, I can get by scouring the internet, which I have been. And sometimes I don't even subscribe to the digital copies, which are much cheaper, obviously, because the printing isn't involved. Much cheaper in price But I've been able to get by. I watch the TV news more than I used to. I didn't watch the news as much as I did because I did depend on the newspaper, because I always felt the newspaper gave me more facts and delve deeper into each story than 15-second little bites on the news. So I always enjoyed reading the newspaper more. I eventually worked and edited for newspapers, so I was much more involved in firsthand operation of that. So I always liked reading newspapers, at least early in my career as a journalist. But in today's world, sadly, you know, I found as I was reading newspapers that the stories were getting shorter because of our attention span. I felt that the copy editing wasn't as good. I was seeing mistakes, factual as well as grammatical, in stories in the newspapers. And I'm like, okay, I can get that online. And so the stories were shorter. I don't think they were as well reported, or they certainly weren't as well edited. And so I stopped subscribing. It was not easy. But I'm used to it now, and you know, a lot of times I'm able to get what I can. I get what I can get from headlines, and some of the newspapers, you know, they allow you to read X amount of stories for free, and then they want you to subscribe. But I have not resubscribed to any kind of newspaper, whether it is hard copy or digital, and I get by reading the headlines and then reinforcing some of those stories by watching the news on television. So that's the way I've been getting my news now, pretty much online and through television news. And I bet you that's how most people do. And I'm not happy about it, but I think the industry forced me to do it by raising the price and cutting the amount of content. And also, obviously, as I've talked about before, as soon as ink hits the paper in a newspaper, it's already outdated because of the speed and the immediacy of the internet. Stories can't make it. As soon as ink hits paper, those stories are there, but the internet is 24 hours. And so new information may come to light, and the newspaper is printed. So that's where the shortcoming is today. It's very hard for a newspaper to compete with the breaking news. And I don't even think they try that as much anymore. And that's why I think newspapers are now trying to do more investigative and long-form stories, because that's not what the internet news is about. And the internet news is about fast-breaking stories. But the internet, you also can't trust that, because there's... Well, first of all, I think I talked about this too. There's very little journalism going on online, and there's very little fact-checking, and it's more about speed than accuracy. So you sort of have to be a little more diligent than you were before. But I talk about this because not only in the background about journalism and how we got our news, but what I want to talk about today. If I don't know if you've been seeing the headlines, wherever you get your headlines from, whether it's television news, whether it's the actual newspaper, or whether it's online, but over the last several months, it's been pretty hard not to know, even on a cursory level, and it depends on your interest how in depth you may have continued to research the information. But over the last several months, I think everybody is aware, at least on a very small level, that Tesla owner and SpaceX owner and entrepreneur Elon Musk recently bought Twitter, the online app, which really in many ways established what we know today as social media. Yes, Facebook and these other apps that have followed it, Instagram and TikTok and all the other ones that have come either before or after it. But Twitter really was the first one to grab a hold. And then Facebook certainly took it to another level. But Twitter was the first one that really caught on. And so I think you have to give Twitter its props for that, because it was groundbreaking, and it did begin, I think, in many ways, what we know culturally as social media. And, you know, today, social media runs our world. And you can deny that if you want, but but it is true, and it's not always not the best, but I think it is true that Twitter does run our, I mean, not Twitter anymore, but social media certainly runs our world. And it's funny when you think about that a company like that would be able to be sold. You know, it really was founded in the early 2000s, around 2006. It really caught on very quickly. It was started by a guy named Jack Dorsey, who's done a lot of different, you know, he might not be as well known for whatever reason as Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, but you cannot deny the impact that Twitter has had. It's been cultural changing, but it's never made a lot of money. You know, it's free. It's out there. I mean, there's people are tweeting and giving their views on things. And it started off as a very cool social networking service where people could comment on anything. And look how naive we were at that time. Like, oh, isn't this a great, you know, once again, the internet was founded on this, to some extent, this principle of democratizing information and letting everyone have free access to information and the ability to share, as opposed to institutions being the warehouse for information. The whole idea was to democratize information and give every person access to information, either to gain it or to share it. And on paper, sounds great. Sounds revolutionary. Was revolutionary. And as I've said many times, all these technologies have, and I believe, at their core, I believe they have very positive outlooks and uses. They are there for good. Unfortunately, they get used by people, and people mostly destroy most things that we touch. Right? Let's be honest. And so we have corrupted social media. Twitter, well, it initially became an area where people could voice their views and voice their opinions and share information. It sounded great, like this world water cooler, right? Well, then we saw what happened very quickly in different ways. Fringe groups and hacking, false information. You know, most Twitter accounts now, if they're by celebrities, the celebrity doesn't even do them. They don't even know what they've hired people to be their social media people. So if you follow on Twitter somebody, especially of note, the odds are that while they might be verified, right? That's a big deal with the check mark. They're not writing them. They're not sharing them. Most of the place now, Twitter is used as a worldwide PR newswire. And let me explain what that is, having worked in the public relations world as well. There used to be something called the newswire. It still is out there, but once again, I don't know how much of an impact it used to have. It used to be a very big deal in the public relations world. That is where you if you worked for a company, that's where you released your news. And that's where the media got it from, was from this news wire. They would have a machine, and that and you would submit it and pay PR Newswire to release your news, because it had subscribers all around the world in newsrooms, and that's how the newsrooms would get it. And then they would, hopefully, when they saw it, they would report on it, either print your news release as is, or at least be drawn to call you up. And companies still use the PR Newswire, but I don't believe it's as influential as it used to be, because people are using Twitter and Facebook and social media for free. Why pay PR Newswire? You can argue that PR Newswire gets to the right eyes, the ones you want them to get to. That's the advantage. It gets to the media. But in today's world, to be honest with you, while it started as a social media platform, I would bet you a majority of people that use Twitter on a daily basis are people in the media. Like I said, celebrities and governmental people, they may have Twitter accounts, and maybe initially they thought it was cool, and maybe they did, you know, mess around with it a little and put their little comments there specific or personally. But most celebrities don't even know if they have a Twitter account. They don't even know what's on their Twitter account. They hire somebody to be their social media person, and they post things for them. So they don't even know what's being posted there. But most media people go there to make their comments, to share their news, to gossip. I mean, basically, that's what, you know, once again, I talked about humans corrupting everything. Twitter, in its infancy, and I'm sure in its conceptualization, was this area to, you know, to share thoughts and information with others around the world. And it's really become just one big, well, it's become two things. It's become either a huge place for gossip, or it's become a place for hate speech. It's become a place for where people can tear other people down and make snarky comments anonymously. And many people have lost their careers because of, whether they're celebrities or journalists or whatever, have lost their careers because of things that they posted that were offensive to people or weren't very thought out. The lure of Twitter was that it was its immediacy, right? It's instant. That's the internet's great advantage, is its quickness, instant communication with everyone around the world. But as we, once again, we as being flawed humans, many times our knee-jerk reactions to things can get us in trouble. And we get upset, or we get excited, or, you know, it could be either positive or negative. And we have this platform to share that immediately with everyone, and be the first one to tell, or be the first one to, you know, and share this, and that's great. But a lot of times those first impressions that we have are not well thought out, and they can be either filled with inaccuracies, or with offensive language, or phrased in a wrong way, and people have gotten in trouble. And many times people have lost careers because of their tweets. And as we've seen, some people have had their accounts stopped. They've said threatening things to people. I mean, once again, it's the human species. Wow. What a case study we are. But Twitter has been around, you know, the Twitterverse. Everybody's tweeting, and that's all you hear about still today. You know, I mean, look at former President Trump. Pretty much Well, I don't know if he got elected because of Twitter, but he certainly changed the tone of Twitter. And then, of course, he changed it so much and was on Twitter every day, he bypassed the original, the established media because he felt, well, why should I have my statements reported on or filtered through the media, the journalistic media, when they don't like me, they have a bias against me. So everything I say, they are reporting, but they are also adding their own spin or their own bias against me. So why should I use them as the main conduit to talk to the American people? So, you know, Donald Trump became an enemy to the media, not so much because they didn't like him personally, and many people in the media don't like him, and that's obvious. We know who those people are. But what he really did, and it was the first stone he threw, was that he decided to bypass the media and go right to the people through his Twitter account, to the point where then his tweets became news. That's where people could go to hear what he had a comment on, and he was, once again, talking off the top of his head, which got him in trouble. But the media resented him for bypassing them. They had been historically the conduit between the president and the public. And Donald Trump said, well, look, this is a new world, and you guys don't like me to begin with, and everything I say, you twist it. These are his words. So I'm going to go straight to the people. And he used Twitter, to the point where then the media started to report on his tweets. And he would say some outrageously inaccurate or outrageously unfiltered comments that made news. But Donald, and then his, and so many things that then all of a sudden his Twitter account, because Twitter then is a private company, even though many people look at it like an extension of the media, it still is not. It is a private company, and they could put out whatever they want. They take advertising, just like the media is, but they're privately owned companies. I mean, they're not, I guess, how you would say, you know, established or legitimate media like newspapers. But it's a very thin line, right? And now we're seeing that some of the, some of the social media things were suppressing certain stories. So, hey, once again, as I said before, once humans get involved in any technology, they pretty much corrupt it and ruin it, right? But then Trump got kicked off of Twitter. But he actually, I think, really put it on the map. When you have the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, arguably, using your app to talk to the world, that's pretty powerful stuff. So while the Twitterverse and Twitter was established over the last 10 or 15 years, no question, certainly over the last 10, it was really Donald Trump who I think even elevated Twitter's profile and usage by bypassing the media and using Twitter as his main communications platform for the world, to the world, commenting on anything you wanted, just like in theory you were supposed to be able to do. Although you have to understand that when you're the president of the United States, what you say carries a lot of weight. It's not the same as if Elton Jim is just, making a little comment, snarky or not, about something that he observes. When the president of the United States says it, stock markets can shift. Countries can go to war. So you have to be careful. And I don't think Donald Trump always was careful. And that's what got him in trouble. But also, what got him in trouble was bypassing the media. They felt like they were going to bury him because he decided that they were not trustworthy enough. They were not his friends. So there's been a clash between the media and Donald Trump for a long time for a lot of reasons. And him going to Twitter, I think, was a major one. He was kind of showing the world that the established media wasn't all that necessary anymore. So you have to, as much as Twitter has been vilified and corrupted and has strayed from its perhaps its initial mission, you cannot deny the imprint and revolutionary change that it helped usher in our society. Twitter was really one of the first, and certainly one of the ones that maintained. As I said, ironically, for as many tweets as people put on there and as many users as it has, it only in the last, I think they said the last 10 years, it's only made a profit in two. A lot of people using it. At one point, there was 100 million users and 500 million tweets a day. 48 million accounts at this point. I mean, it's crazy. But they couldn't find a way to make money from it. Most, social media sites, platforms, make their money from advertising. They don't charge you. Now, they're finding ways to maybe more monetize things because they're finding that they can't continue. It's kind of been a salad days, but now with a tighter economy, with inflation and a potential recession looming, a lot of companies are cutting their advertising budgets, is what always happens. Once again, economies are always cyclical. And if you've been around long enough, you've been through enough, recessions as well as expansions of the economy. And during recession times, companies cut back. And then when things are going better, they expand. They spend more money. And so Twitter, apparently, you can't deny its popularity as well. I mean, once again, when you are a company whose name becomes synonymous with an action or a product, when your brand name is used by people to describe a general product category or a general product usage, you've hit the jackpot. Right? When you go to a restaurant, what do you order? I'll have a Coke. Well, then what do they ask you? Is Pepsi okay? Yes, fine. But Coke is known in most people's minds as a cola. I'll have a Coke. I'll have a Kleenex. That's really a tissue. But we ask for a Kleenex. Even in the tech world, Google that. You don't say search for it. You say Google it. And tweets, Twitter, as I said, it was coined the Twitterverse. The world was known as the Twitterverse. And if you weren't on Twitter, you were, out of step. You were not cool. Everybody has a Twitter account. Everybody's tweeting. Everybody's getting on the, this worldwide gossip platform for a while there, until we started to see the dangers of Twitter. As I said before, knee-jerk comments that can get you in trouble, false information on Twitter, false identities on Twitter, Twitter themselves censoring information or withholding information from people's accounts, deciding according to their standards, whether you could be on it or not, kicking people off like Donald Trump or your next door neighbor. It wasn't just high profile people that got their Twitter accounts suspended. people kicked off of Twitter. If you made threatening remarks or you made off-color remarks or something like that, they would suspend your Twitter account. And for some people, oh my God, this was catastrophe. They live to be on Twitter. Twitter was the perfect outlet for narcissism. As I've said, that's what the internet has really done, and social media is, you know, it's made everybody feel that they've got an important voice, even though some people don't. They don't know that. They're spewing hate speech. They're spewing false information. That's not good. But, you know, everybody had to be on Twitter. I'll be honest with you. I have a Twitter account. I don't think I've ever tweeted. I was given a Twitter account. It was started to me when I was on the radio full time. When I first started, probably in, I was when it really started to take hold, probably in 2007 or so, 2008. I don't even, someone opened it, a Twitter account for me because it was so new and so cool and everybody was on there and you could say stuff and share stuff and make little comments and get some attention. So everybody had a Twitter account. It was opened for me. I think it's out there. But I have never used it. I wouldn't even know how to get on it. I don't even know the password. I never found. Now, once again, I had the advantage at the time when this whole Twitter thing was going on. I was on the radio, so I had a platform to talk about things that I liked, that I wanted to talk about. I was on the radio at 50,000 watts every day, so that's maybe why I didn't need. Now, once again, you know, companies view Twitter as another way to promote yourselves, and a lot of people, that's why I was this account was started for me, because you got to go on Twitter to raise your profile. But I felt like, you know, I had a platform to do that. I had a microphone. But some people have been addicted to Twitter. They're still on it. Of course, the big deal in the Twitter world then was to get this check mark, this verified, because, of course, as I said before, you know, once people get involved, it all gets corrupted, and then people were starting fake accounts, fake Twitter accounts for people, and posting things that they said, and so then the key was to get this check mark that is so valuable, I guess, in the Twitter world, to get a check mark. Whatever. I never was, I just was never into the Twitterverse. There's younger people were, and now, of course, now it's cool to get off of Twitter, you know, or I'm going to quit Twitter for a month. People, you know, like they're giving up food or something. I'm like, okay, I've given up Twitter for the whole, I've never taken up Twitter, but they made it like not doing Twitter for a month or 2 months was going to be enough for an announcement. So Twitter, there's no question, has been a dominating, influential force in the world, socially, politically, you name it. But as a company, it really has never made much money, which is what it is at the end of the day. You can have all these altruistic you know, motivations of bringing the world together and people sharing and people democratizing information and all those you know, high-minded goals of sharing and you know, access to information, all those things. But as I said, at the end of the day, Twitter is a company. Twitter is a public company, and it needs to make money to survive. And it hasn't in a long time. But Twitter, don't get me wrong, Twitter, like any social media thing, I can sit here and talk about its bad points all I want. But for many people, people still use Twitter every day. They enjoy it. They love it. They're addicted to it. And if you're someone like Elon Musk, if you're addicted to it, as he apparently is, so much so that despite its bad balance sheet, he offered to buy Twitter to make it his own plaything or make it into something that he felt it should be. And he had $44 billion in order to do it. And many people were saying, wow, $44 billion, he's way overpaying for a company that's never made any money. Impact, certainly. Balance sheet, not so much. And if you saw the timeline of the story, he first offered Twitter $44 billion. I think everybody involved in Twitter couldn't believe their eyes that somebody would want to buy the company for that much. I don't know if they were looking to sell the company necessarily, but when somebody offers you $44 billion to buy you out, that's pretty hard to turn down. And, he made some millionaires even more rich with that buyout. And then if you remember the story, not only then did he wanted to buy it. Then I think he started to look at the books. He had access to the books, and then he decided he didn't want to buy it. But then apparently he had signed some kind of an agreement that he was legally bound to buy it, and ultimately he did buy it for $44 billion, a company that made very little profit at all in its existence. But once again, if you're that rich, this is like, for him, it's like buying a yacht, buying some crazy yacht or some crazy extravagance. And don't forget, I'm sure he had other investors. Those $44 billion didn't just come right out of his pocket. But pretty big price tag for mostly the access that Twitter has. Certainly not the business aspect, but the access and the name. Everybody with the tweets, everybody with Twitter. Twitter, Twitter, Twitter. But it's so funny that I've been following this, and this is another aspect of society that I've followed it from afar. I don't really give a tweet about Twitter. Never use it, and never was that interested in it. And as I said, I know that it. And as I said, I think even now, it's to me, it's even less attractive because I know what it's become. It's just become kind of a place to put out your wares, to promote, as opposed to sharing with everybody. It has its advantages, there's no question. You still can reach people by using Twitter. So I'm not against it. I'm just not someone that uses it. I see its value when it's used correctly or used effectively, but sadly, I also see how it's being used in negative ways too. And of course, Elon Musk is a controversial figure, and so right away after he bought it, now what's this mad billionaire going to do with it? And, he has a reputation for being a little more conservative in his politics and his worldview. So right off the bat now, you've seen more liberal people, especially high-profile people on the liberal side, saying they're leaving Twitter, they're closing their accounts as a protest against Elon Musk. And now in today's world, well, for a while, certainly at the beginning of this century, when Twitter started in the early 2000s, it was the only game in town. But now it isn't. So you can leave Twitter, and you can endorse or be involved on other social media platforms like TikTok or Instagram or Facebook. and not even go to Twitter. So a lot of people are trying to make some kind of a big statement. I know Jim Carrey recently announced that he was leaving Twitter. And at the same time, when Elon Musk took over, he reinstated Donald Trump's Twitter account after it being taken away from him. There's a lot of people that have left Twitter, and they make such a big deal because of that. A lot of celebrities, you know, who just do not want to be associated with Twitter because, you know, Elon Musk is a left winger. You know, how much he really rules it from his political, you know, viewpoints. We'll still see how long it's been. But there's just been a lot of high profile people. Some, you know, I don't know, some worth mentioning, some not. As I said, a lot of people in the music world, a lot of people, you know, Jim Carrey, as I said, I you know, do you care that Trent Reznor is not on Twitter anymore? I don't know. But I've just found it interesting how there's been so much talk about this. And I really, I mean, has the buyout of Twitter really affected you in any way? I mean, if you're a Twitter user, do you still use Twitter? And if you are, once again, I have no problem with that. I don't know how you use it or why you use it. I hope you use it responsibly. Because in theory, as I said, when it was developed on the whiteboard, I think its mission was valuable. Its mission was for good, I believe. And you can't deny that when it started, it was a valuable tool. I think right now, for the most people that use Twitter, it's in the news all the time because the people that use it the most are the people who report on news. I think the majority of people using Twitter on a daily basis, either using it or reading it, are people in the news business. And you have to understand that what you see when you scroll through, as I said before at the beginning here, what you see in your newspaper, what you see on your news, on your TV news, and what you see online in news, as much as we like to think that there's this free passage and use of and flow of information, it still, to some extent, is being filtered and edited. Because the people that write on things write about either what they're interested in or what they think you'll be interested in. And so right there, that's an editing process. And so I believe that this Twitter story... Be careful there. The Twitter story is gaining popularity, and it's every day you just see online. Elon Musk, I just read last week that now it's been reported that Elon Musk has created in some barren offices, you know, a couple of, you know, bedrooms. I mean, so he's sleeping in the office. And right away, you know, there was all this controversy within the first couple of weeks that Elon Musk bought Twitter. He was laying off 3,500 people, and they were talking about the layoffs, and they had the email leaked to people and the process of how people were getting let go. And you're going to be hearing about lawsuits moving forward from people who have been fired by Twitter, and, you know, in terms of their severance or why they got fired. You know, don't forget, as I spoke a few podcasts ago, that's why I always say listen to the past so you know where we're going in the future. I was talking about how the tech world was facing its first real recession. in the last 20 years, since social media, especially the last 15. And there's a whole generation of workers who have been going through a high-flying economy. And this whole idea of being laid off and fired is a completely new concept to them. They only know about getting hired. They've had 15 jobs, but they've left each one to go to another one to get more money or new perks. They've never been fired in their life, and suddenly they're finding out that they've been fired, and it's not because they did a bad job. They've just been laid off because the company can't afford to have this many people. They you know, once again, these tech companies, when things were going good, as most companies, for all the MBAs out there and all the Wharton schools of business, once again, it's run by people, and people are greedy. And people never think anything wrong is going to happen. So when companies have good quarters, they want to get bigger. They want to do more. And they overextend themselves, and they hire way too many people, more than they need. And when business gets cut down, when recession hits, then the layoffs come. And it's not about performance. Sometimes it's just about numbers. And it's a sad reality. And for somebody who has been a part of that on both sides of the coin in his career, I know it's not easy to be called into an office one day and to be told that you're not going to be working there tomorrow. And sadly, I know what it's like to be the person on the other side of that desk, to have to tell somebody that. Not easy, but a reality of business. And so this Twitter thing is a legitimate story, don't get me wrong. One of the biggest, most influential companies in the last 20 years being bought out by one of the, if not the world's richest man, for an inflated price. That's news. That's a story. And then, hey, he wants to make this company profitable, right? That's why you buy it. Yeah, it might be a plaything, but he's not just going to keep dumping money into it. So he does what every responsible manager does, whether he did it right or wrong. We can debate that, but hey, sadly, in any company, the biggest expense that any company has is not its manufacturing, it's not its supplies, it's not its people. The biggest expense a company has is its workers. Its workers are its most important asset, and at times it's its biggest drawback, because people who work use up are an expense. Their salaries, their benefits are an expense. You want to keep making your product. You need those. You definitely need those. And so it's difficult because people are integral to running your company, but they're also the easiest to get rid of. If you're going to make a product, you need these X ingredients, or you don't make the product. So you can't cut back on your ingredients for your product or whatever it takes, your supplies to make that product. So where are you going to cut? So this story, I understand why this story has some legs. First of all, right on its face, you've got Twitter, a well-known brand name, as I said, which was able to establish itself, its name as a behavior. Tweet. Twitter, tweet. Oh, I'm going to write a tweet. I mean, that's, when you say that, that's social media, right? Twitterverse. The word, the product was actually used to describe the behavior. Or the bigger category itself. You can't do better than that. As I said, Google that. I'll have a Coke. I'll have a Kleenex. Get me some Mr. Clean, right? Mr. Clean is a product. It's a brand. You know, but it's a cleaner. But you don't say, give me the cleaner. You say, give me Mr. Clean. So Twitter achieved that. Very few companies do, but Twitter did. So when the world's richest man decides to buy it for $44 billion, that's a big deal. I get that. And then the other sideline of that is when it starts to make some business decisions, that's a big deal, right? Anytime a company's laying off thousands of people, that's a big deal. That affects our economy. People then will not have a job, right? That's how recessions start. When the economy slows down. So people losing their job, that's a big signal of a recession. So when Twitter lays off 3,300 people, that's a big deal. And then, as I said, a sideline to that is it's the first time, because we're seeing all these high-flying tech companies like Facebook, like Google, like Twitter, who were hiring, like Apple, hiring. And suddenly, for the first time in their life, in their history, they've had to lay off people. They don't even want to call it layoffs, because that word is so scary, and it seems to them like it's going to be negative. And their younger employees who've never been through layoffs, who've never experienced being fired for cause or not, how are they going to deal with it? I mean, we're in a very fragile, you know, everybody's offended. Everybody's feelings are hurt with the slightest of things. Well, if you lose your job, that is a sort of a sense of self-worth. When you're laid off, that is a damaging blow to your psyche. Especially when you've done a good job. And you're not being let go because you did a bad job or you did something wrong. You're just being eliminated because you might not have as much time at the company or experience, or you're making too much money and they can hire two people for the price of one. A lot of, you know, it becomes a, what's interesting is while you're working at the company, you are valued and people rely on you, right? Every day you're flooded with emails and what are you doing and get this done. We have deadline, blah, 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 blah. And then in one day, as important as you have been on a day-to-day basis for 5 years or 15 years, whatever it may be, 2 years, 6 months, whatever it is, you seem so vital to the operations that you're involved in at that company. And then one day you can be told you're gone and that company goes on without you. And that's a shock to the system. So you also had that happening at Twitter and other tech companies too. For the first time, you've had a generation not used to mass layoffs like that. And especially this millennial generation, which is very fragile and very easily affected and offended. So I understand it. But it's also been interesting because I can take a step away from it because there's so much buzz about Twitter every day, and I get it, but I don't get it because I don't use it, and I never really have. So it's kind of been interesting at this point to be able to observe it from the outside and see all the different little layers of activity that are going on in this company, but at the same time, not really have it affect me. I can honestly say that I'm not quitting Twitter because I never really joined Twitter. I'm not doing an intermittent fast from Twitter because I never feasted on Twitter. I was never addicted to Twitter, so it's not going to be, whatever happens to Twitter, I find of interest as a pop culture observer, but not as a pop culture user. But wow, there's a lot going on in Twitter. Are they going to charge you for the check mark? All these things are so important to some people, and so it's kind of been interesting for me to look at it from the other side to say, I don't need a check mark. I don't even know what that means. I don't use it as a platform, but I am interested from a news junkie standpoint and as a person in society to see what happens next, because hundreds of million people do use Twitter, and you've got this high profile guy that knows no boundaries. And so it's going to be interesting to see what he does. But is all this Twitter, it's got the world in a Twitter, right? Is all this Twitter affecting you? Because from where I'm sitting, as I said before, as interesting as it might be, I still don't give a tweet. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. Or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 342. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Tweet, tweet.